You're listening to a Department of Homeland Security podcast. Our duties are wide-ranging, but our goal is clear, keeping America safe.
Thank you all very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I must say, I think it's my first time out at this particular venue, and I'm glad to see it. I have not yet gone into the ice sculpture room yet. Have you seen that? You know what I'm talking about? Okay. But in any event, thanks for the welcome, and I'd like to thank the Interagency Council for Applied Homeland Security Technology for inviting me to speak today. I was joking that the other day that the Homeland Security arena has a lot of acronyms, and they seem to be multiplying and getting longer each day. I think when we add it all together, NCIC, or the National Cyber, which is the National Cybersecurity Communications Integration Center, when we have ICAST, et cetera, what we basically are saying is we have a lot of very intelligent people working on a number of difficult security challenges facing our country. So today I want to recognize our many federal, state, tribal, and local partners who have come together to speak about and talk about one of the most serious threats to the homeland, the threat of an attack via an improvised explosive device. Now, we all know that IEDs come in many forms, and that building them does not require a lot of technical sophistication or materials, that they can be used and have been used on land, sea, or in the air. And as we know all too well, they can cause extensive damage and loss of life, as well as chaos and disorder. So this is a threat that we take most seriously at DHS, and as I know everyone in this room does. And it is a threat that the Obama administration is fully committed to protecting against, whether here at home or overseas in support of our nation's military and our own allies. Simply put, the IED threat warrants our sustained attention as well as our best thinking. The recent arrest and indictment of Najibullah Zazi on a charge of conspiracy to use weapons of mass destruction, in this case was explosive bombs, against persons or property in the U.S., serves as a vivid example of the kind of threat we continue to face. And because this threat ties directly to events in the Afghanistan-Pakistan theater, we must continue to put additional pressure on al-Qaeda and ultimately diminish the threat that they pose to the United States and to the international community, a plan that the President will detail in his strategy this evening when he addresses the nation about Afghanistan and Pakistan. So today I want to talk with you about what we can do collectively and individually to protect against the threat of IEDs right here at home. I want to talk about the kind of public-private partnerships, technology, information sharing, and public education that I believe are necessary at all levels to achieve our aims. And I want to talk about how our efforts fit into a larger but no less significant challenge, which is protecting our nation's critical infrastructure from a range of threats, whether from terrorist attack, natural disaster, cyber attack, or infectious disease. So I know that over the next 3 days, you will delve into many of the technical and organizational aspects of this difficult issue. But let's step back just a bit and talk about IEDs as one very serious threat among a range of threats we face from terrorism and radical extremism. I also want to address how this threat fits within the great need we have to secure the nation's critical infrastructure. Now, there are often a lot of terms of art and jargon used in this field, but we shouldn't necessarily assume that everyone is comfortable with all of it. So let's speak in simple terms about what is at stake. We have all seen the horrible toll explosive devices have taken in battle in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. We've witnessed the terror of Oklahoma City the Madrid and London bombings, to name just a few incidents. But beyond the human, economic, and psychological toll of these horrific events is the effects such attacks can have on our critical infrastructure. Critical infrastructure is defined as something our society depends upon, such that if it were damaged or destroyed, it would have a significant impact on our ability to function. So let me repeat that. Critical infrastructure, defined as something our society depends upon, such that if it were damaged or destroyed, it would have a significant impact on our ability to function. Think of the nation's power grid or banking system, the internet, water treatment facilities, nuclear power plants, transportation, our food supply chain and agriculture. A terrorist attack, or even a natural disaster like a hurricane or earthquake, against or in the vicinity of any of these things can significantly disrupt the functioning of the government, the private sector, and produce cascading effects that go far beyond the physical location of the particular incident. Accordingly, we all have a stake in the protection of these vital assets and key resources. It follows, then, that all of us have a role and responsibility to do our part in ensuring their resilience, and everyone has a role to play. Government, private sector, nonprofits, communities, individuals. At DHS, we have been saying again and again that making our nation more secure and more resilient is a shared responsibility. No one government department can do it all. As individuals, we need to exercise a greater sense of vigilance to say something if we see something, and a stronger commitment to the preparedness of our families, communities, and businesses. This means all of us having an awareness of what to look out for, of how to spot suspicious packages or individuals, of whom to call in emergencies. These are not hypotheticals. Attentiveness by store clerks has led to bomb plots being foiled. Vigilance by border guards has kept bomb-making materials out of the United States and put those who sought to bring them in jail. Now let me talk about the department's exact role. As members of government, we have a major role to play in making our nation more ready and resilient. Indeed, this is the central mission of the Department of Homeland Security. But at DHS, we also know that we are not the team. We are part of the team. And our private sector, in whose hands the vast majority of the nation's critical infrastructure rests, must play an absolutely critical role as well. This means that government and industry, as well as the many small businesses who may have connections to the 18 critical infrastructure sectors, must work together to build trust and learn from each other. Here's an example. DHS has, in the past, and will be again next week, worked with officials from the hotel and retail industries on strategies for getting frontline workers some basic training on spotting suspicious behavior. This is precisely the kind of training that has helped us disrupt threats in the past. Threats to critical infrastructure. These partnerships are critical given what we know about the current threat environment. Now, as you know, the consensus view of the intelligence community is that the terror threat to the homeland is persistent and evolving. The recent FBI arrests of terror suspects in the United States further underscores that Al-Qaeda, its affiliates, and those inspired by its ideology intend to attack us here at home. We must adapt quickly to new and emerging threats, such as cybercrime and attacks on critical infrastructure, such as the rapid spread of pandemic disease. Now, this administration has been forceful about engaging the whole range of threats, using all the diplomatic, military, economic, technological, educational, and cultural tools at our disposal. But to ensure a streamlined and complementary approach to threats, we have partnered, and we've partnered with the Department of Justice and other agencies to develop important national-level planning documents, including the National Strategy for Combating Terrorist Use of Explosives in the United States, as required by Homeland Security Presidential Directive 19. At DHS, the Office for Bombing Prevention is responsible for coordinating this participation. And under the HSPD-19 framework, DOJ, DHS, Department of Defense, and other partners have created a joint program office to lead and coordinate the execution of policy and programs to combat the terrorist use of explosives in the United States. Our goal is to create a national framework focused on five key areas to combat the IED threat: prevention, detection, protection, response, and research and development. In each of these key areas, we coordinate with state and local partners, especially those with specialized responsibilities such as bomb squads, dive teams, and explosives detection canine squads. Let me go through each five. Prevention. Our first task is to focus on prevention. And that starts with providing tools and resources to our state and local partners to build capabilities and countermeasures to reduce our overall risk. The $1.7 billion Homeland Security, Transportation Security, and Infrastructure Protection Grant programs are a primary means for building our prevention capacity. For the past 2 years, counter-IED capabilities have been highlighted as priorities in these Homeland Security Grant Program guidance documents. Another key to prevention is information sharing. Our Office of Bombing Prevention developed and launched the Technical Resource for Incident Prevention, known as the Tripwire, a secure information sharing portal to provide intelligence and analysis on terrorist IED tactics, techniques, and procedures, and to provide those to qualified officials and law enforcement authorities. Tripwire is currently used by over 8,000 users. To address the need of the private sector for access to focused information, we created a similar portal tailored to the private sector called Tripwire Community Gateway. So you have Tripwire for law enforcement. For the private sector, you have Tripwire Community Gateway. We also are sharing information with the public and suppliers of precursor chemicals so that they can be better informed and prepared. And we are educating private sector suppliers and employees through our bomb-making materials awareness program to help them identify the materials used to build IEDs. Acting Undersecretary Bart Johnson will be here later on Wednesday to address some of these and other activities in which the department is engaged to better share information and intelligence with our state and local partners so that they can better assist us in the prevention factor of our work. Detection. We are working to increase our detection capabilities by expanding our explosive detection technology in several ways. For example, TSA has deployed over 1,500 explosives detection systems and 7,400 explosives trace detection machines at airports across the country to screen check and carry on baggage. TSA has also established the Bomb Appraisal Officer Program in over 100 airports to increase the accuracy and efficiency of screening operations and IED detection. Through the screening passengers by observation techniques, SPOT program, TSA officers are focusing on passenger behavior for signs of malicious intent. And we also have approximately 700 explosives detection canine teams deployed throughout the country, providing an increased layer of security at airports, mass transit systems, border crossings, and federal buildings. Third, protection. A significant part of our protection effort centers on critical infrastructure, as I've mentioned before. The National Infrastructure Protection Plan, the NIP, lays out the partnership approach, and the government and sector coordinating councils work together to develop priorities for government and the private sector to protect our critical infrastructure across the 18 critical infrastructure sectors. Our Office of Infrastructure Protection has deployed over 90 protection security advisors throughout the nation. They in turn have supported state and local responders and owners or operators of critical infrastructure by coordinating protection efforts, including planning, training, assessment, and incident management support. The Office of Infrastructure Protection has developed more than 2,000 buffer zone protection plans to extend terrorism prevention and protection efforts, including those for IEDs, into the communities that surround our most important infrastructure sites. So you have the 18 sectors, and they in turn have developed 2,000 buffer zones, all of which now have approved plans. Of course, we want to reduce the risk posed by the use of dangerous chemicals in IEDs or other attacks, and ensure that we protect the chemical facilities themselves, and we're doing that through the Chemical Facilities Anti-Terrorism Standards, CFATS. And those rules now are out, and they are being implemented right now for the larger or Tier 1 and Tier 2 facilities. The Office of Infrastructure Protection is also responsible for enforcing CFAT, among its other obligations, and we are in the process of establishing the workforce necessary to inspect facilities and work with owners and operators throughout the country. Fourth, response. To strengthen our response in a potential attack, we have focused on response planning, capabilities analysis, and planning across jurisdictions. Specifically, we have conducted on-site response capability assessments for over 175 state and local bomb squads and dive teams. This has given us a better understanding of the nation's overall preparedness, and we will guide it and use it to guide future investments and track current progress. We've also provided training to thousands of state and local first responders in IED awareness, advanced bomb technician training, and in other related areas. And we've assisted over 100 state and local jurisdictions in creating underwater terrorism prevention plans for the 16 high-risk ports across the nation. Fifth, research and development. Finally, and perhaps most significantly, our Science and Technology Directorate has established a counter-IED program to focus our nation's research, development, testing, and evaluation community on reducing the risk of an IED attack. I know that Ruth Doherty, the Program Executive Officer for Counter-IED, has already discussed some of our specific efforts. But the range of technologies supported by our S&T Directorate is aimed at early detection and effective response, and that is with respect to multiple types of IEDs, some that have already been deployed, some that are only deployed in our imaginations, but we always have to be working to think ahead of the terrorists. I'd like to close by saying that at the end of the day, our success will hinge on our ability to work with our partners across the board at all levels of government and the private sector to monitor, protect against, and ultimately reduce the threat of an IED being used successfully. Our engagement with ICAS is a good model for the kind of partnership that we seek to have. I wish you a successful symposium. I thank you for the work that you are doing to keep our nation secure, and I'd like to thank you not just for what you have done, but for the work you are about to do. Thank you very much. Can you take a few questions? Sure. It is really hard to see with those slides.
Yeah, I know. I warned you. Any questions that Secretary Napolitano would says she'd be happy to invite questions?
It's hard to see.
Any questions?
Very good.
I can ask one.
All right.
Make it hard on you. So one question that has come up today and in prior discussions and in the planning of this conference is that obviously there are many needs. There's the need in the IED area, in weapons of mass destruction, cyber, and so forth. And as much as we want to, we can't always make every need a priority. So what is the best way that you see the department can prioritize IED versus other threats in order to be most effective?
Well, I think one of the things that we do is, first of all, we start from what are the known threats that we have and the known vulnerabilities that we have to assess overall risk. And when you think about threats, one of the things that we've seen is that those who would seek to attack us or our allies or military tend to use similar methodologies over and over again. They weaponize aircraft, for example. That's why we pay so much attention to the air environment. And the IED fits right into that category, where for a relatively low-tech, inexpensive device, properly placed or used, you can cause more chaos or perhaps loss of life, depending on how you do it. And so if you use that kind of analysis and you think about protecting critical infrastructure, that's why I emphasize that in my remarks, knowledge about or being able to detect an IED fits right up there. And it's one of those things where the notion of shared responsibility is going to be greatest, because it does fall, say, for example, in an airport with a see something, say something sort of explanation or education of individuals. Having in the private sector people aware of abnormal purchases of peroxide, and knowing who to call if they see something that's strange in that field. Well, we know that is something that is used in explosive devices, and we've seen that in some of the recent cases. So that's intersection of the private sector. Training those who, if you have a facility, a private sector facility, a physical facility, and training those who you've hired as your curtain guards, or knowing what to look out for as you patrol the ground, say, at an oil tank farm, that's part of the shared responsibility too. Those are all kind of areas of vulnerability where the threat of an IED or the use of an IED could be potentially very effective. And so as we seek to, as we deal with all different kinds of threats, the frequency and historical use of the IED, the fact that it can be used in many different ways that could have an undue impact, and the fact that it can be used against our critical infrastructure, all get kind of thrown into the mix of why it is that we have to focus on it as a priority within the department.
Okay, let's thank Secretary Napolitano for joining us again today.
Great, thanks. Thanks, John.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck with you. Okay.
Appreciate very much.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Department of Homeland Security. For more information, please visit www.dhs.gov. Thank you for listening.